the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to, as you can see on screen, fancy setup here. Here we go. It is the World's End post show. I need my phone.
I silenced it so I could at least like.
And I'm just going to quickly do that as well. A big thank you to everybody for joining us, whether you're watching on Facebook, whether you're watching on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, whether you're watching on YouTube, we appreciate you. Or you're listening to this on all podcast platforms, Sunday night's main event. Check it out. Show them some love. And thank you very much for joining us and spending some time with us.
So hello, I guess my name is Aaron Grant. I'm just processing now. This is what we're doing in place of Collision Catch-Up this week, as there was no Collision.
Yeah.
That's why, as you were doing that whole thing, I'm like, I guess I gotta do my hello too.
That completely threw me off that we didn't get Collision this week, if I'm being honest with you. But yeah. We decided to volunteer and step up to the plate, and here we are. We're hosting this bad boy. So thank you very much again to SME Radio for having us. As per usual, check us out every single Sunday morning. As you can see, nope, that corner, right, reverse.
If we're looking off to the side, it's because we have our chat and anything on that screen there. So we're both definitely just looking to the side at the same time.
We're trying to keep track of everything here. I got somewhat of a fancy setup. I'm trying to make things cool here, so. One step at a time.
Made it look pretty decent.
One step at a time. But yes, thank you very much for joining us. And we had a bit of a chaotic end to World's End. We've seen a World End in particular for one gentleman. But I got to be honest with you, Johnny.
Yeah. I was going to say, but let's just kick it off. Like, we don't need to buffer too much. What were your genuine thoughts on the pay-per-view?
There was just like, I don't even think it was a bad show per se, but I almost think with AEW increasing their amount of pay-per-views that they're going to be having on a regular basis, the pay-per-views felt a lot more special beforehand. And I feel like with this particular show, there was something that took away from, I don't know, like the Continental Classic, fantastic over the last month. I think it's rejuvenated AEW's product in terms of that's honestly what AEW was about from the get-go. Yeah.
I was going to say those are some of the, I mean, I know it has been across Dynamite as well as Collision, but for us who have to regularly watch Collision has definitely brought it up quite a bit. So it's unfortunate that the full end to everything of this year that has been built at AEW really.
Excuse me for a second.
Flat. Our cat is scratching at the stove. This is what happens when we go live. She stopped.
This is live things, but yes, it's one of those things. Like they have the long term storytelling, but like AEW was always built on like essentially like the dream matches and like the big time matches going down, and there wasn't a lot of that going down for me tonight in particular. Like there was a lot of thrown together matches. In particular, there was 2 8-man tag matches that kind of had no purpose to them. You had this random match that, yeah, there was a little bit of storytelling to it, but honestly, there wasn't a lot that was set up in the sense of, you know, like it's just really frustrating that a lot of the stuff that was on tonight's pay-per-view was last second. That's a lot of the stuff that WWE does and a lot of stuff that people don't prefer. Sorry, I just seen the chat and popped me hard there.
Sorry.
Trying to distract my cat.
I think the issue with AEW pay-per-views quite a bit is it's like you said, WWE does it too, where last minute it's very like, how many of our side talent can we get onto this pay-per-view last second? How many pre-show, multi-man, any sort of matches, can we get on this card?
To be fair, with the pre-show, there was only the Battle Royal that was technically multi-man, but yes, no, I do see where you're coming from.
Tags,
yeah, the couple 8-man tags.
Circumstances where the 8-man tag, I remember when they announced, particularly the one I'm sure we're going to talk about quite a bit, the Sting's last match in New York, they kind of added a lot of people to that match that didn't need to be. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of, again, it gave Sting a match on the pay-per-view, but if it's not, spoiler, not happy that that was his last match in New York.
Yeah, that was. There was a couple matches tonight where I was kind of shaking my head. I think we should start off with what everybody's talking about in the chat. What's playing on the screen right now. The main event for the AEW World Championship, you had Samoa Joe challenging MJF. MJF in a 400-plus day title reign. Yeah.
He's looking real rough for wear.
Yes.
Like, he's having a hard time. Lack of build-up. Absolutely. Leashy, there was definitely a lack of build-up for a lot of matches. And that's what I mean by a lot of last-minute people being thrown in, where there was some build-up happening with, you know... Actually, you know, I was going to say with the Jericho and Sammy, but no, Sammy just came back. There wasn't really build up for that. And then they just sort of threw Sting and Darby into there. And like just another team came out. Another team. There wasn't really any need. Appreciate a good eggplant. Thanks, Daniel. Sorry, our cat's also just being psycho at the side of the screen. If
maybe because of course she is while we're live.
But... yeah, no. So getting into the main event, as we were just starting to get into
all the eggplant emojis, apparently.
All the eggplant emojis. MJF is looking rough right now. He has made it very clear he is feeling rough right now. He is not in a good state physically whatsoever, but they had to wrap up the story that answer the question, who is the devil?
Yeah. So the main event, I'll be honest, the way they ended the main event, they had ref bump. You had a bit of a situation where it ends up where Max is asking for the ring. Cole has the ring. Adam Cole making a surprise appearance tonight at the pay-per-view, cheering MJF on throughout the entire match. Again, asking Adam Cole for the ring. Cole kind of searching around. It was kind of shades of when Wardlow turned on MJF and like he couldn't find the ring and then eventually found it and gave it to CM Punk. He ended up finding it though, he being Adam Cole, handing it to MJF, but too late. Joe gets him in the chokehold, and eventually you have MJF succumbing to that chokehold. And
it was very
anticlimactic.
It fell incredibly flat. Like, yeah. There was even this hesitation when the referee acknowledged, like, yeah, he's sorry, got distracted by the TV. acknowledge like, yeah, he's out. And it was one of those awkward, like, ring the bell, I don't know, kind of back and forth moments. And then it just, the crowd hated it.
It was frustrating because Max has had such a great reign. He's had some solid matches, and he, yes, at times wasn't necessarily wrestling as much as people would have liked, but it also made it feel like a special attraction, and in a way where WWE is like doing with Roman Reigns, but it actually made it feel special when MJF was champion because he was having those big time matches. He felt important, and to have this anticlimactic end to his reign, and obviously it has a lot to do with, I'm sure, the injuries that he's going through. I'm sure that it has a lot to do with potential contract situation, although I think he's re-signed at this point.
I have to agree, though. Part of the reason I felt it was so flat is that Cole did not have anything to do with costing him the match. With the exception of him digging through his coat and kind of hesitating.
See, and that's kind of what I was last second deep diving through like Reddit just to kind of see what people were thinking. Like, everybody was kind of saying, yeah, Cole didn't cost him. And like, I guess you can kind of argue.
Roundabout way you could argue to say that he did. But at the end of the day, you know, Samoa Joe still choked him out.
Yeah.
Like, he did just naturally lose the match, had that sad moment, followed by, obviously, the lights out moment.
Mm-hmm.
Devil in the ring. Well, Devil's... Do they have a nickname? I can't recall.
No, Devil's Maskman. My cat is just on Zoomy.
I don't care for Samoa Joe. I don't mind him being the champion.
Giving him his flowers is... nice to see. I know he was TNT champion. He was a very dominant TNT champion as well. And I think this is an okay payoff. However, it was the way they went about it, I think, again, was very, very anticlimactic. It's interesting because there was kind of like the solidification of MJF literally losing everything all in the same night, his championship, his best friend, potentially his run in AEW.
I was about to get a little dramatic and say potentially his career. I wouldn't say his career, but like physically he needs a break. He is not, again, like I said, he's looking worse for wear. He physically went through a beating and had his kind of come up its moments, like giving an F5 to Samoa Joe. I have to respect that wholly, especially with the condition that he is in.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I don't care too much for Samoa Joe being world champion, only in the same sense of I get kind of bored with the same old story of the big old wrestlers that just dominate and there's no major effort to it. They just come out, squash, it's over, that's the story. And like, I feel like Samoa Joe's TV reign was kind of like that. And so I hope that his world champion reign is a little bit more interesting.
And
because I respect and I get the idea of the whole, you know, big guy squash match, but at the same time, it reaches a point where it's kind of stale.
No, I'll give credit where credit is due. When it first happened, I was expecting it to maybe be 10 minutes, but they stretched it out a good 20-25 minutes and got a lot out of it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where they go forward, but I don't like how they went about it.
No, I think they kind of, again, just especially to end a pay-per-view, it really fell flat for me.
And then you go back to who was revealed as the cohorts with the devil, devil being Adam Cole. You had Wardlow, you had Roderick Strong, and you had now being revealed as the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. I was going to say Mike Taven, but Mike Bennett, Matt Taven, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Wardlow. That is the whole group. And that's what's happening right now. So no surprise, Mass Ben throughout the entire stable. Everybody there pretty much has a reason. I'll be honest, I was genuinely surprised to see Roddy a part of it.
Yeah, I kind of thought that Roddy was a little bit more the blind guy in all of it. But
everything makes sense.
I'm very happy to see it genuinely.
And again, yeah, we'll have to see kind of the payoff to that going forward. But that was the main event, a very underwhelming main event. If that is the end of MJF and AEW, potentially, then what a run. I think that's got to be commended. He's had some of the best matches in the company's history. He's had some of the craziest growth in the company's history from the first match in AEW, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, the Casino Battle Royal. I'm pretty sure that was one of the first matches.
First card.
Coming all the way to main eventing multiple pay-per-views, becoming the longest reigning world champion in history, beating name after name after name after name to retain that championship. He solidified himself as not one of the top stars in just AEW's history, but quite possibly, especially in the last decade, if not longer, one of the top stars in pro wrestling. He's a polarizing figure, and it's going to be.
He's our scumbag. He is so good at what he does. He is good at being an ass. Like, and there's an art to doing that where you're not just being disrespectful and annoying, but you're actually like
tearing people down a peg,
the best way I could describe it.
I can appreciate that, especially. Yeah. So,
no, I didn't really expect to see Wardlow either, Lishi, but I get it.
He was somebody that was like, shying it away too, like he's saying, I'm not one of the goons, I'm out in London just chilling, doing my thing. Like he was basically saying like he's nowhere near the pay-per-view, so he was trying to push away as much as possible. So
yeah,
very, very interesting end of the pay-per-view. A lot of people not happy, but I'll be honest, I'm on the same boat, but I'm also willing to let it play out, and that's something that a lot of fans needed to do, is let things play out.
Unfortunately, I think, though, the general vibe of the entire pay-per-view, and a lot of people have said it, I've been online throughout a lot of the pay-per-view, and a lot of people have the same feeling. It's just, it was a very weird vibe of a pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. It was just not great chemistry in a lot of the matches. Not a lot of the matches, really, like, but I don't know, something just fell off through the entire
show. There was definitely a couple clips I've seen, especially throughout the night, where I was just like...
Yeah.
And I'm... Yeah. It's just definitely not one of AEW's best pay-per-views. And honestly, I think Johnny said it earlier in the stream, quite possibly the worst AEW pay-per-view of the year. And once again, not saying it's a bad show, but just on paper and the lack of build-up and a lot of the matches that were put on this show, it didn't deliver, at least in my personal opinion. But we'll dive through the show, and maybe, heck, going through the show, I'll end up changing my mind. It wouldn't be the first time I've done it.
Yeah. When we've run down a show and been like, oh, maybe that wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
We started the show, the kickoff, with Chris Statlander and Will Nightingale. Honestly, not their best match.
This is an example of where I'm saying, like, chemistry off. Something about it off. Watching that clips was a little unfortunate. And I love both of them.
It sucks.
They're both incredibly talented, but yeah, that was not a great match.
It's just a night, like, I've had those nights as a worker where it's just like, you don't mesh with somebody, you don't click with somebody, and you just have an off night. And unfortunately, that's what it was tonight for Statlander and Nightingale. They didn't click tonight. It happens. It doesn't mean they're not good workers. It doesn't mean that they can't do their job properly, but it's just, again, sometimes you just have those nights, and unfortunately for them, it had to take place on a pay-per-view, and that's the shittiest part about it all.
Yeah, that does suck. I mean, I don't want to be like, at least it was on the pre-show, but when you're looking at the way people look at things...
Well, here's the thing with the pre-show, and you can look at the pre-show however you want to look at the pre-show, but at the end of the day, the pre-show is a selling mechanism for the pay-per-view. People watching the pre-show...
That's true.
Are watching the pre-show to see what the pay-per-view is going to be presenting, as well as to see the matches beforehand. And if those matches beforehand aren't great, then you're not going to be more inclined to buy the pay-per-view, no matter what's on that pay-per-view.
Which kind of sucks, because a lot of times the pre-show matches are quite often the ones that are just kind of like, here you go.
Thrown together last minute.
Again, let's throw together a battle royal of some sort and get everybody going at once. Like, get everybody on the show.
The AEW women's division, this isn't taking anything away from it either, because I think the girls are working their asses off right now and trying to really establish themselves and top themselves. And, like, every time they go out there, they're trying to steal the show. Again, it's just one of those times where things just didn't go their way, and it sucks, because I know how hard that women's division is trying to step up their game right now with women's divisions like WWE's, with Impact Wrestling's. Like, there's some solid women's divisions, probably one of the best women's divisions in professional wrestling we've probably ever had. So, again, nothing to take away from Statlander and Willow. They're fantastic performers, but just not their night.
No, unfortunately. And then we got into, I believe it was the Battle Royal.
It was the Battle Royal next, yep. The winner getting a title opportunity anytime, any place for the TNT Championship. Let's just perfectly state that. Foreshadowing. As
timed very well.
Yeah, for real though. as we had 20 participants, and it ended up being one kill switch as he was in the finals with I could appreciate that comment. He was in the finals with Trent Beretta, and it seemed like Trent was going to get the victory, but it ended up being Killswitch, the former Luchasaurus, picking up the victory and carrying away that contract for a future opportunity at a TNT championship match.
At any time.
Anytime, any place.
Time, any place. And last one, we got into an FTW rules match between Hook and help me.
Wheeler Yuta?
Look, I suck at names. So, I know. No disrespect, Wheeler Yuta. I suck at names and I blank out hard.
Am I taking over here? Oh, okay. All right. FTW rules, honestly, it was exactly what you expected it to be. I wasn't too surprised with the finish of the match, and I wasn't too surprised with what we got from the match. Hook retained the championship, and it's exactly kind of what you expected.
Yeah, and again, I have to agree, Lishi, the
a bit
anticlimactic of the Battle Royal.
Yeah.
Kind of felt like a bit of a sudden ending, but...
A lot of weapons in the FTW rules match. We've seen a couple of spray-painted items with FTW on them, with Wheeler Yuta just making mockeries of them throughout the entire match.
And, stop sign.
Yes. Was it a stop sign? I thought it was a trash can lid.
There was a stop sign in one of the matches. I thought it was that one, but now I'm questioning myself if it was maybe in a later match that had the stop sign pulled out.
It's potential. Yeah, it's potential. I don't know. Can't do the Englishes very well, ladies and gentlemen, but here we are. it's what? 12:17. There we go. 12:17 a.m. Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. Whether you're on Facebook, whether you're on X, whether you're on YouTube, whether you're listening to this on the replay on your podcast platforms.
It was the FGW match. Thank you. Okay.
So there was a trash can lid and a stop sign. A lot of weapons. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
No holds barred for that FGW.
Right. Moving on to the actual beginning of the pay-per-view, which was the eight-man tag, one of the eight-man tags. It was the Continental Classic Leftovers eight-man tag, as I like to call it, because that's exactly what it is.
Accurate description. Very accurate description.
As we had, oh man, team-wise, I'm going to suck here.
I was going to say, don't look at me.
Yeah, no, I'm not even going to try and do this. Give me 2 seconds here. Either way, like a genuinely solid open to the show. This was the... Do you really have to do this now? If y'all could only see, like, it's just off camera. She's got a giant catcher here, and she's got the most zoomies. Okay. Our cat's just...
living her life right now.
Trying to be a part of this podcast, but not actually trying to be a part of it. Yeah, the eight-man tag. I really enjoyed the finish of the match. It's the only... way Daniel Garcia ended up winning throughout the Continental Classic was with the jackknife pin, and it was the way he ended up pinning not only Brody King in the tournament but Jay Lethal here to win the entire eight-man tag match. It was amazing to see the pop that Garcia is getting. He's got a lot of momentum behind him right now. I think the Continental Classic has done wonders for certain guys, and Garcia is one of them. Regardless of the losing streak that he was on, I genuinely believe that Garcia has potential to be one of those guys that is the future of AEW. Where they go, like he did team up with the Blackpool Combat Cup guys tonight, and obviously with the JAS, whatever's going on there with the Leftover guys, and Daddy Magic, and Garcia. Yeah, apparently I'm loving the word Leftovers, but
that's a good word to describe it, though, because there was some solid heat with Daddy Magic ringside.
Well, he got clobbered after the match by Brody King out of nowhere.
They were having some back and forth, so it could be building to something, because he's been notably present throughout the entire tournament. Mm-hmm. Daddy Magic has sort of just worked his way around the rules and been on commentary the entire tournament.
So. Yeah, I've definitely noticed that as well. It's been interesting to see how that's transitioned, and even seeing the promos backstage with Daddy Magic being like, yeah, this guy was potentially going to be a first round draft pick and now he's a bust, basically calling out Garcia with how much he was flopping throughout the tournament and losing all of his matches. So yeah, and that's it for me, Leechy. He's basically saying
he needs to not be in a group. He needs to do his own thing.
100%. He shines as a star.
And we've joked about it many times before, but he's gotten his dance over, but he doesn't rely on it. He doesn't need a group to rely on to get himself over. He is a very talented wrestler as it is.
Funny enough, as soon as Garcia was going to go hit his dance on his entrance, Bryan Danielson's music hit, and almost looked like a dad trying to protect his son from doing something embarrassing. It was quite funny.
Although then later in the ring, it was, I would say, Garcia and... the fun uncle of Mark Briscoe hitting that dance.
Yeah, Mark Briscoe hitting that dance is something else. Something else.
Yeah, that was well done. Well done.
It was the team of Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, Daniel Garcia, and Mark Briscoe against Roosh, Jay Lethal, Jay White, and come on. Pop up on the screen.
That's
for
what
me.
I'm looking at. Look, awful at name retention. I'm awful at move name retention.
Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry, whoever I'm forgetting right Brody now. King.
Oh yeah, the one Brody we were King. Literally just talking about.
Thank you very much. This is what happens, ladies and gentlemen. We are past midnight. Thank you very much for joining us. We're a little forgetful sometimes.
We're forgetful on a normal time day. This is late.
It's true. It's true. Late. We kind of reverted to recording in the morning because of this very situation where we do get a little forgetful, and we get a little less forgetful when we do it in the morning. But
we have time to actually process and remember everything. But
no, we're doing it live.
It's good for a pay per view to do it live.
Absolutely. Yeah, solid 8-man tag to kick off the show. Genuinely, I enjoyed the match. I think the Continental Classic brought a lot to the pay per view, and I think like AEW should be proud of that concept. They announced that they are bringing it back next year as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that tournament next year, because I honestly think that it did elevate the product over the last month or so.
I would say so. I kind of hope that they're able to keep some sort of momentum going from it, because generally speaking, for me, it has made AEW so much more interesting to watch, having that sort of a structure to it and without so much outside interference.
Yes.
So I hope that they can kind of, this is unfortunately a little bit of a dip in,
that's AEW's biggest complaint sometimes, is the just overbooking of some of their main events, hence tonight's main event, unfortunately.
Being overbooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, what followed our 8-man?
We had Miro and Andrade El Idolo. So really quickly with this, rumors quickly spread this morning on social media that Andrade is pretty much finishing up with AEW, and this potentially could be his last match. So this built-up relationship with CJ Perry had to have kind of a finale, and we did see that tonight as CJ ended up costing Andrade the match.
Miro, for her husband.
Yep.
Miro.
Miro picking up the victory.
Miro still looking a little unsure.
Dejected? I don't know.
Dejecting her? Rejecting her? Like, she looked very proud. Like, she was very, I'm here, that's my husband, I'm going to help him where I can. He looked, I would say, almost a little offended that she interfered, mm-hmm. a little bit. Like, I don't need your help. I'm making it on my own, which has been his whole point this whole time. But she did follow him out happily. So their story is clearly not done, but it sounds like her story with Andrade is done.
Yeah, they made it, like, they didn't completely write him off. He took the loss clean and tapped out, but he did have Miro in the figure eight, and that's when CJ got involved. That kind of, again, one of those situations, again, once where AEW kind of presents something where it could be potentially good on paper, but unfortunately, I don't know if it was a contract situation and they, like, something fell through, or they knew that this was happening the whole time and they kind of just put this together to see where it would go, to maybe entice him to stay with something. I don't know.
Which, like, shout out to CJ Perry for being hospitalized with the craziest looking finger I have ever seen.
Yeah, that infection that spread to, like, her elbow, it
literally, like, her finger exploded, and she was in a cast that, like, matched her black outfit, and I respected that heavily. But I can only imagine, especially if they did know that this is where the storyline was ending, how frantic that was. But either way, I have to agree, Lishi. This is definitely a match where we knew where it was going, and I think with having so many ongoing storylines, and there's something to be said about the slow burn, where it gives things time to cook, but then also, you know where they're going to end. Yeah. You know exactly what is going to happen. And after a while, when it does, you're not really excited. You're just like, yep, called it. Okay. Good night. And that's, again, coming back to the main kind of, I think, where we ended up.
Yeah, pretty much. And kind of an anticlimactic run, I think, for Andrade altogether in AEW. I think that's why people are honestly clamoring for him to go back to NXT or potentially WWE main roster. Either way, him being booked under Triple H, let's be real, it's been way better than anything that honestly he's done in AEW. It sucks because, like, Andrade is a fantastic performer, but just with the issues that he had backstage with the situation that went on with Sammy Guevara, again, we don't know, we weren't there, we can't speak on it, but there was obviously something that happened that was acknowledged. And
sum up just a lot of backstage.
Yeah. And that's it with AEW, unfortunately, right now, where a lot of those situations that are happening backstage are taking away from the product. Max himself addressing it in that Players Tribune article that just came out, what, a day or two ago before this match.
Beautifully written article.
Amazing article, but he had a lot of solid points where a lot of the bigger moments in AEW are taken away from guys just being idiots. I hate to say it, but that's the truth.
Well, again, like how much foreshadowing happened there to where the whole vibe of this pay-per-view is off, because right now Twitter's exploding, which we're not going to dive too deep into at this moment. But, you know, just the reality is there's definitely like a dark cloud kind of looming over AEW and their backstage, and it did put a bit of a damper on the show.
And I mean, even something like Andrade, like people knowing that he's gone, it took away from the potential of that storyline moving forward, not just in actuality, but in the fans' eyes, because if they know the AEW crowd is a smart crowd. They know that if Andrade is leaving, this is it. Like they're killing it off tonight. So their interest in the match, you could tell, was not there.
Especially at that, once you have that shocker moment of like, you know, CJ pulling Andrade, everyone does kind of zone out, because they're like, okay, we know what's happening.
Yeah,
like,
we know where we're going for.
Okay, yeah, again, like, oh, okay, yeah, we figured that much, and now it's basically over, even though the match wasn't even over yet.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much all there needs to be said about that match. Again, like, unfortunate that it is what it was, but I'm curious to see how they have Miro and CJ interact going forward, and if that's actually something they fully embrace, like the Rusev and Lana act that was super over in WWE that you should have never changed.
She was really done with it. Like I don't think that was there was I think some change on WWE, but I think she also kind of had enough.
I'm sure, but I don't know, man. You just, if something's not broke, you don't fix it.
Just saying.
Moving on to our AEW Women's World Championship on the line, one of the most over acts and one of the best acts in AEW right now. The way they're presenting it, the way they're everything that's just going on with Timeless Tony Storm and her butler Luther, fantastic, as she defended the championship against the first champion in Riho.
I adore Tony Storm. I've always been a fan, but I have to say Timeless Toni Storm is just one of my favorite things to watch. Just the fine details of the production, the camera flipping to black and white, the moments of like her close up, just the things that Luther does to assist her. He had a great moment where she jumped on his shoulders outside of the ring and ran with Riho down the side to pull a move. And
yeah, they like chucked her off the apron. Yeah, it was creative spots.
Very creative.
But obviously, Toni Storm retaining the championship. I don't think anybody thought that Riho was regaining the championship here tonight. I don't think anybody thought Toni Storm was losing the championship.
And I like Riho. She's great. But I think Toni is on way too much of a dominant streak right now.
Way too much of a hot streak.
And it was kind of forgotten and brushed to the side when she turned into Timeless Toni Storm. Just that moment they did have with Riho when she was still with the Outcast, spray painting her and just like really going after Riho. So I think that sort of puts a nice little bookend on to that story.
Yep. And
where Riho goes from here, I have no idea.
And then the Mariah May interactions with Toni Storm. There's got to be something up there. Mariah May making her American wrestling debut on Dynamite this week. So we'll see exactly where that
also takes shout us. Out Mariah also coming out after the match with a bucket of rose petals and sprinkles them over Toni. Yeah,
prancing around. Toni Storm in a circle.
Toni Storm just laying in the rose petals. I love Toni Storm.
Yeah.
I love everything that she's doing right now with the Timeless.
So good. As we move on to one of the most disappointing things of the night, Swerve Strickland. Originally, we were supposed to get Swerve Strickland one-on-one with Keith Lee. Imagine a lot of people were clamoring for it. We never got the payoff to Swerve and our glory. We never got the official one-on-one match between these two guys, two of the most talented guys on the roster. And so we finally were going to get the payoff. A year later, nonetheless, we were still going to get the payoff, and everybody was excited for it. Tony Khan basically saying, like, yeah, this was kind of in the works the whole time. Like, I planned for this to go this way, and I totally don't believe that. But
I don't believe a lot of what that means. Again, we're not going to dive into it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll leave it at that. But yes, it's supposed to be Swerve and Keith Lee. Keith Lee basically nonchalantly saying on Twitter earlier that he's dealing with an injury and he's not too sure if he's going to be able to make it. All of a sudden, Tony Khan announcing on Twitter that the match has been changed and his tag team partner, Dustin Rhodes, would be stepping up in place. And Oh, man.
Can I take this away?
Yeah, please do.
I hated this. And I think when he comes out, Dustin Rhodes being here, like Swerve just having his moment. Also, of course, Prince. I was going to say Nana having his moment always. But Swerve just looking his intimidating self, sitting on the corner of the ring on the turnbuckle. And then out comes Dustin. And Swerve comes down and pulls out a cinder block. Throwback to when he hit it over the chest of Keith Lee, I believe. And
yep.
Puts Dustin Rhodes' foot on it. Held in place by, I believe, Nana.
I believe it was Nana.
And stomps it through the cinder block. Big dramatic, you know, medical, everybody, bring him all the way out. No, he's going to fight it and he's going to rush back the ring and then an actual match takes place. And I thought it was so stupid.
It sucks because, like, I remember we made a quick stage trip earlier to get some fun goodies because, you know, got to do what you got to do when you're a Canadian. But we seen this as we were driving out and we were all kind of like, oh, like that sucks. And nothing against Dustin because like,
no, I respect Dustin a lot as a wrestler. He's a good wrestler.
And I guess in kayfabe sense, it made the most sense to put Keith Lee's technical tag team partner against him. But like, I don't know, man. For a pay-per-view match, I almost think you just pull this or you put Swerve's elsewhere or something. But like, I don't think this was the call. And I get you probably didn't want to beat Swerve or you didn't want to take away from the storyline, I guess, but like at that point, it's, you know exactly what's going to happen, and like you basically, I don't know, it killed my interest completely for the match personally
because it built up such a heel in Swerve, which he doesn't need any building up. He is a superstar.
He's sung to Hangman's freaking baby.
I forgot about that. I agree. I think they should just cancel the match because even when they did the whole cinder block, Dustin, in my mind, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Dustin was supposed to do it. He got taken out, match over. But then when he came out and then proceeded to basically no sell the injury and just wrestle like normal,
it dragged out way too much.
He sold the injury for like the first like couple minutes and then the match was way longer than it needed to be. And he just dropped the complete, like his foot had never gone through a cinder block. Like, that just completely made Swerve look weak to me.
I don't know, just the entire, like, sequence. And it was only, like, I'm literally looking at it, it was only 9 minutes and 30 seconds, like, the actual match. But in terms of, like, how much the angle played out before the match, too, it's just, like, that match maybe needed to be 5 minutes, I'd say.
That's why I'm a little shocked to hear that it was 9 minutes. Yeah. Like, that was bell-to-bell time.
Yeah.
That did not need to be 9 minutes.
Yeah, so that tells you everything you need to know. Now getting into Mr. Controversial as we get into the second 8-man tag match of the evening. We had the Don Callis family, Takeshita, Powerhouse Hobbs, as well as Ricky Starks and Big Bill, your tag team champions, taking on Sting, Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, and Chris Jericho.
Shout out to all the signs in the crowd.
Yeah, and, so
NDA.
So I'm gonna keep this as professional as possible because
we weren't there.
We weren't there, as well as at the end of the day, we are representing a company, not just representing ourselves.
Yeah, the chants were pretty nasty.
I think whatever went down, something needs to be addressed, and whether that does happen tonight on the press scrum, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not watching it right now, and if it has even started.
I know we were going to try and throw it up, but then we didn't end up getting a chance to. I think if AEW and Tony Khan are smart, they don't let Jericho speak in that scrum.
I definitely agree with that, but I also wonder if Tony addresses it at all, and if there's an investigation that's launched into it, because I mean they've done that before where they've launched investigations into certain incidents.
And they've done that, but the thing is, I think the reason that people are taking issue is that when they've done that, they have pulled their wrestlers from TV while the investigation took place. For example, one of Jericho's team members, Sammy Guevara, when he went through everything, yep. They pulled him.
Yep.
they did what they had to do. They did their investigation as well as he did whatever training and sensitivity he had to do. And then he came back to TV once it was all said and done. So the fact that all of this is so prominently happening, that on Twitter, Chris Jericho is almost trending above AEW World's End.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's definitely taken away from the pay-per-view.
It took so much away.
And maybe that's, I don't know if that's something that's, like, I don't want to say, like, timed by these scandals getting released and all this shit going down, but, like, it just seems like anytime AEW runs a pay-per-view, there's some sort of negative energy that gets thrown out there, and it's, I don't know, it's frustrating to see, because, like, as somebody who's been a day one AEW guy, the whole restore the feeling phrase that everybody's been talking about, it's not there.
It's gone, unfortunately, right now.
And it sucks, because there's a lot of talented guys in that locker room. There's a lot of talented guys you don't see on TV. And yes, they're giving a lot of jobs to a lot of people that wouldn't have had them before. But it's interesting to see how much Tony is influenced by certain people and cares so much about social media. Like, he's somebody who will go out of his way to have arguments with people on social media. It's the weirdest thing. And to see it go from, you know, Cody and the Bucks and Omega and Hangman and all those guys kind of being the main featured guys to all of the other guys being built up. But I mean, look at tonight. It's the first pay-per-view in history. We had no Elite. We had no Hangman. We had no Kenny Omega. We had no Young Bucks on the pay-per-view whatsoever. And that alone takes away from the feeling of AEW. Those guys are AEW, whether you like it or not. And
when you look back on when it all started, that's why it started.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's stuff like that takes away from the product, but it sucks, because me as a fan, I love to sit back and watch professional wrestling, but it's hard to focus on the product when you've got so much being talked about outside of the show.
And with that also said, like, inside the show, like, the crowd had a vibe.
Yep.
The crowd, especially for this match, but the whole show, the crowd came with a major, again, cloud kind of around them. And so when there's...
It wasn't your typical New York crowd. Like, no. New York crowds are usually hot and on fire the entire night. This crowd was kind of just there.
And they were chanting, and they were kind of stirring the pot. And
again, I don't know if it's one of those things where, going back to what I was saying about too many pay-per-views and, like, AEW kind of overdoing it with the pay-per-views, because they had a very solid system with the 4 pay-per-views a year. And don't get me wrong, it's not a bad thing to throw a special pay-per-view here and there, but you just had a pay-per-view a month ago. You've had the couple of special Dynamites and Collisions as of late as well on top of that. Like, it's a lot for a fan to take in, and I think especially throwing a lot of the stuff together last minute like it did, it's hard to get invested. And
it doesn't get the storylines enough
that
build.
Plus everything that's going on outside the shows themselves, it all mixes into one little, how do you get
back from that? Yeah. Anyways, enough of that downer.
Yeah, we...
It did kind of go up from there, thankfully.
We had Sammy Guevara picking up the victory really quickly. Which, again, kind of a weird moment as well, I think. Sting's potential second last match.
His supposed last match in New York, which I feel for him, because it completely got taken away by everything that happened.
And not only that, just kind of a lackluster match. As well as Sammy gets the pin. Cool moment for him. Nothing against Sammy, but, like, Sting... Everybody left in the ring after the match. That was kind of cool to let Sting have that moment with the fans. But, like, he can hit that shooting star press and then have Sting put him in a Scorpion Deathlock, or you can do something different where maybe he hits the GTH into the Scorpion Death Drop. Like, I think the ending moment has to be Sting.
Yeah, I was a little confused when it wasn't. And also Ricky Starks taking the pin, which I wasn't too
I think that's potentially foreshadowing the Sammy Jericho team getting a shot at the belts.
There's storytelling happening, and I'm sure there will be more storytelling happening, but ultimately just again it fell flat. And I think that sort of sums up a lot of the show for tonight, was just it fell flat.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it did. House rules next for the TBS championship. Julie Hart defending against Abaddon, and
her one Abaddon's or rule. No, was it Julia Hart's
rule or Abaddon's? No, Abaddon's rule was bites were legal.
Fighting is allowed. Respect to Abaddon.
Fair enough. It ended up being Sky Blue getting involved in the match as kind of expected, helping Julie Hart retain the championship. No sign of Thunder Rosa, which I was kind of intrigued to see. It seemed like they were kind of building up Rosa potentially as a future competitor for that championship with the interactions that were going on.
I feel like they had to finish off the Abaddon build, though. They've been doing something with Abaddon, nothing mm-hmm. like considering they weren't on TV for so long, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, no, she really revitalized herself over the last little while, and props to her. She got a pay-per-view spot out of it as well, which has to be commended, honestly, at this point. Sky Blue and Julie Hart, a fantastic duo. I think the progression of Sky Blue has to be noted. She's one of the homegrown stars in AEW, as well as Julia Hart, and I think two of them together are really stepping up and showing why the women's division AEW is one of the best. So big shout out to them too, and really looking forward to it.
And I saw somebody talking about like Julia Hart's stats for this year. It's like she's wrestled 40 matches and only lost 4 or something like that. Very impressive. And she's only 22 years old.
Yeah, that stat blew my mind. Respect. As we move on to the no disqualification match for the TNT Championship, I will say very, very impressed with this match. I think it's safe to say.
I was going
to
say, thank God.
Match of the night.
I 100% agree.
I think there's no questions. As Adam Copeland challenged Christian Cage for the TNT Championship. And fantastic match. Right off, starting off hot. Copeland jumping Christian halfway through his entrance. There was just so much that happened in this match, genuinely.
A lot of callbacks, because I think the reason everybody was so
I popped
excited,
hard for the WrestleMania 22 throwback gear.
Yeah, callback right from the start.
Right from the
start. How he's coming out. But just, again, these are childhood best friends. They came to absolutely beat crap out of each other. They knew it. And so they really did no holds bar it. There were ladders, tables,
kendos, tables.
Flaming tables. As soon as the tables came out, I was like, light it on fire. And they did. And that was really
well. The crowd started chanting, we want fire. And I think when you bring out a table in an edge match or an Adam Copeland match, you know what you're signing up for. The crowd's going to instantly go back to that moment. And they delivered, although, goddamn Nick Wayne.
Yeah, Nick Wayne being the one to actually take.
Oh, my goodness.
And Bump is right. Like, he bounced off of that table.
It was gross.
Flew backwards. The table did not break. Was still on fire.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Ow.
Talk about I am the table. That was an I am the table moment, if I could say so myself. But a big moment to close this match as Adam Copeland defeating Christian Cage, getting his moment as the new TNT champion. And just as he's celebrating, he's having that moment. He's getting excited and embracing the crowd. Kill switch popping up from behind, attacking Adam Copeland and seeming like he's going to cash in that contract that he won just earlier in the show, which, going back to what we said, anytime, any place, as he's about to do it, Christian stops him and tells him to give him the contract. Oh, baby.
Storytelling?
101.
I love it.
Yeah, it was really well done.
I loved it.
And just as it seemed like there was the potential of Killswitch to turn on Christian, Christian pulls him close and whispers something into his ear. Sweet nothings. I don't know what it was, but either way, it was.
Yeah, I was intrigued. I was very intrigued to hear what he was saying, but essentially, Killswitch does it, hands the contract back.
Christian signs it. Hits Actually, it should be noted, Copeland winning with
the kill switch
and Christian winning with,
I almost called it the shine, sphere. I had to stop myself.
Okay.
Winning with the spear. So winning against each other with each other's finishing moves. Good touch. As
in the record books, not only do we have a two-time TNT champion in Christian Cage, but the shortest reign in TNT championship history with Adam Copeland holding that championship for a mere few minutes.
He barely even got to stand up to celebrate. But he did walk himself back out.
So clearly this story is not done. Clearly we've got something going forward with these guys. So I'm very intrigued to see how they progress this story.
Because it's not done. I think everybody was really expecting this to kind of be the conclusion of it. So that's the one excitement I'll say. This match was fantastic for me. Easily best match of the night.
Match of the night. Although this next match potentially could argue it, as we had John Moxley and Eddie Kingston in the finals of the Continental Classic.
I think it goes into like what your preference is, if you prefer the hardcore or the classic match type, because those, like, I would say two best matches of the night were very much both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And this was a great just wrestling match.
The chops, the sounds, some of those chops from Kingston were making on Moxley. Moxley himself having to like take a moment, and you never ever see John Moxley take a moment from a chop, from any sort of a strike. So that just tells you everything you need to know with how much of a badass the both of those guys are. And they threw everything at each other. It was insane. It was.
They did not hold back. And it was.
Now that I'm like, it's hard between the two matches, the Copeland and Cage match and this match here. It's.
Again, I think
neck and neck, man.
Neck and neck comes down to personal preference at the end of the day on that one. But also, Bryan Danielson on commentary as well.
Yes. And Eddie Kingston doing the damn thing.
Well,
having his moment, becoming the first ever Continental Champion, regaining his Ring of Honor World Championship, his New Japan Strong Openweight Championship, and combining it with the AEW Continental Championship, making a Triple Crown Championship. What a moment for Eddie Kingston. As somebody who nearly retired before he got signed to AEW, to see him having a moment with one of the top guys in the company and getting the embracement of the crowd, as well as, Leechy, Brian giving it Eddie his flowers and commentary finally too, after calling him a bum throughout the entire tournament.
Yeah, he was really just talking shit the whole time and giving him his flowers, and then at the end having a really good moment between Moxley and Eddie as well, just really giving him that hug, letting him have that celebration.
And again, going back to what this tournament did for the company, I really believe that this is the stuff that AEW is about. The storytelling is there sometimes, but the matches, the quality of matches is what people want to see. And I think this brought out the best in every performer in that tournament. Everybody wanted to step up and give the best show possible every time they were going out there. And this was no different from any of the tournament. I think they put up a, 5 hour or so thing on.
Oh, the full storytelling.
Yeah. It was like one of those story. Yeah.
I love that they put together. The storytelling breakdown.
And I highly recommend you going out of your way to check that out if you got a day on your hands. Like, it's watch an hour of it at a time. That's some of the best professional wrestling that we're potentially going to see from AEW. And I think that tournament is going to be something that people looking forward to on like a yearly basis. Again, they announced they are bringing it back. I do agree with Ilichi before we kind of wrap things up here on the post show. Not the best move from AEW introducing another championship to the company. They do have a lot of championships as it is.
So, genuine question, because I feel like I've been back and forth, because at the end, Eddie celebrates with all three belts. Are they all now just in that one new belt?
And
or are they all three different title reigns, three different title defenses?
It's kind of one of those like Roman Reigns situations when you're not too sure of like how many belts are going to be held at once, I guess. You look at like the World Tag Team Championships weren't defended tonight. The World Trios Championships weren't defended tonight. what the was the women's world championship defended tonight?
Toni Storm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I feel like
yes, we saw Julia.
Yep. TNT. We saw the no disqualification match. So, like there was a couple championships.
It was decent for.
But then you got the integration. Oh yeah, the international title. Good point. Yeah,
but then like you kind of get into the nitpicky area where they sometimes defend Ring of Honor titles.
The integration of the ROH titles, the potential of like sometimes New Japan championships popping up, and they do use other promotion championships as well. So just like the confusion of that on top of how many championships are already in the company. Yeah, I don't honestly get it, but. I do like Kingston getting that moment. It's kind of a selfish thing where not necessarily with the company putting another championship in the system, but if it means Eddie Kingston gets that big moment in the semi-main event of a pay-per-view, then it is what it is.
Worth it. Yeah. Worth it.
So, man.
That about wraps us up because we pretty much talked about the main event when we started up.
I mean, again, the main event, Adam Cole revealing himself as the devil following the main event. Samoa Joe, your new Ring of Honor, or Ring of Honor. Wow. See, we're talking so much about championships.
They get so much back and forth.
Samoa Joe, your new AEW world champion, and Adam Cole revealing himself as the devil with Roderick Strong, Wardlow, and your new Ring of Honor tag team champions, Mike Bennett, Matt Taven, that whole crew is all together, and yeah, made MJF's world literally end.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see where this goes now that the devil has been revealed, especially with the shape that Max is in and the contract's up in the air. I'm just very curious to see where this goes.
And Adam Cole is also still in a boot. He is still injured. That is something to be noted as well. Just saying.
To how much of that is real and how much of that do you think is maybe just him playing it up? I was half expecting one of those moments where he like kicks off the boots and just starts like jumping on one foot, which I know he's actually hurt. So I wasn't really thinking he was going to go that far, but there's always this little part of me that's just like, what do I believe here?
All right. Well, with that said, I am at Matthew Gray for Days 4. You can follow me on all forms of social media. Follow me on my world of independent professional wrestling. Whether you're in the comments, wasting your time and wasting your night, or whether you're follow me and support me on everything I do. I appreciate you. Babe, take it away.
And you can follow me on all forms of social media at Aaron154Grant. Follow me in whatever I decide to tip my toes into in the world of professional wrestling, as I'm not a wrestler, but I just like to help out wherever I can.
And do dope ass checks. Anyways, guys, we're out of here. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next week in Collision Catch-Up.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.